Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's 50-50 football. Neil Atkinson and Paul Dehaney only in the studio. But we've got Robbie Scotch and Natasha Henry and Andy Middleton joining us to talk about Crystal Palace, Arsenal and West Ham, respectively. So this is the show for you that we've got coming this week. And we'll start at the bottom, Paul. Hull go to Palace and Swansea go to Sunderland. And what a game Sunderland-Swansea is, really, in that, you know, one that you possibly could even have circled 32 games ago as being a big one, but everything is on it for Swansea, and it's the first thing that really warms you is that the players have made the gesture of paying a ticket and travel for the Swansea contingent.
Yeah, I think that's the least they can do considering the position they're in the league. But no, seriously, that's a lovely gesture and good to see, and I wish more Premier League clubs followed that example, even if they just did it once a season. You know, it would just be a nice gesture for all fans, you know. Yeah. But looking at the matter of hand, Swansea going into it in good form. But I think the curveball in this is that everybody would have thought Sunderland would literally be on the beach now. But, you know, they got a result last week against all the odds. Nobody saw that one come in.
Nope.
Particularly Hull. They probably saw that was the game to almost like make sure they'd be one game away from safety. And it's been turned on its head by Sunderland suddenly playing with some sort of a freedom and abandon that, I guess, the pressures of or non-pressure of relegation brings.
That's, for me, it was such a strange result last week, you know, certainly given the home record that Hull have had since Marco Silva's come in. And suddenly they found themselves. I wonder whether or not, so it's easy for I think at times, I always remember that, you know, for instance, going back under David Moyes, when David Moyes was Everton manager, you'd see them and they'd have a good season and a bad season, a good season and a bad season. I always thought one of the reasons why was what begins to happen to you is if you have a good season next season, when you're at home, you're treated like a big club, mm-hmm. like a powerhouse, like a side where if we get a point, it's great. But then what also happens to you, and that can happen to Everton anyway, a side like Everton anyway, but what also happens to you is then when you go away from home, well, suddenly a point at home to Everton is all right, because
yeah.
Look where they finished last season. They finished sixth. They're a good side,
yeah.
And I wonder whether or not Hull, for the first time, they came up against a side who treated them with huge respect, and it went, "We'll just break us down then." Mm. And then they picked them off on the break. Whereas most of the time, when Hull have been playing at home, they've been coming up against sides who've been thinking, "We've got to find a way to beat you. This should be 3 points. It's Hull away. They could go down."
Yeah, I was just surprised in that. I mean, I watched the game. I don't know if it was nerves, but the mentality of the whole place didn't seem to have that urgency that they've had in recent weeks, which can happen. You can have a bad day at the office, but you just feel that, it's a bit like, we'll talk about Spurs later, but it was a bit like that game where the game was so important, but it just seemed like you just couldn't rouse that. It just seemed like one game too many in their home run, you know.
Yeah, Marco Silva said afterwards that there was big tension. He used the phrase "big tension" in some of the team, and I think that's, you know, when you suddenly for the first time they go to that ground, not just with them expecting to get a result, which they will have done because they wouldn't have got the results they got, but with them with knowing that the wider football world thinks you should be beating Sunderland here. Hull beat Sunderland. Hull, as you said before, it surprised everybody, and I think that's what really killed them. And now they find themselves in this situation. And I think with Swansea then going, you know, and this must-win sort of game that they've got, and again, they're in a bit of a similar position, but I think it being away from home could actually help them in this instance. You know, they know they've got to go and play well at Sunderland.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really difficult one to call because I wouldn't like to be facing, you know, someone like Jermaine Defoe who can just score out of nothing. Gylfi Sigurdsson's in good form, and Llorente is in good form, and Tom Carroll also. And Leon Britton made a really big difference. I think his experience and the fact that he knows how important it is for Swansea. I mean, they all know that, but, you know, it means that little bit extra special to Leon Britton because he's been through all the leagues, and he's always he acted almost like a talisman last week. Whenever he made a challenge, the crowd were behind it, and almost like it roused the team around him. So if I know he's away from home this time, but I'm sure he can have that kind of impact again.
And also, you know, with them having the transport paid and all that sort of stuff, those supporters will be bouncing. And then the next game, so that's on the Saturday, and the Sunday game. And for me, that's the, you know, it's really very much the the game to watch in terms of the 3 p.m. kickoffs, Sunderland versus Swansea. I very much wish it was on television, really. They put Man City Leicester on television, which we're going to come on to discuss. But there's something in the back of my mind thinking, well, I'd probably rather watch Swansea fight for their lives against Sunderland. But the key one that sort of that follows, that is on television, it's on the Sunday at 12 o'clock, and it's Palace versus Hull. And I spoke to Robbie Scotcher earlier about this one, and here he is talking about it from a Crystal Palace perspective. Robbie Scotcher indeed. And Robbie, how's it come to this? Palace came to Anfield, I watched them, they got themselves a tidy little 2-1, and I thought to myself, well, that's that done, that's all over bar the shouting, and suddenly you've ended up in an absolute massive 6-pointer, last home game, second to last game of the season against Hull. How has it come to this?
Because you made us run around so much that we were all knackered. By the time we did that then against Tottenham, and by the time we got to Burnley, no one had anything left. It was three games in a week, and just one, the Burnley game, everyone was just spent. Also, we lost Tompkins at the Liverpool game. It was quite a bad challenge there. That could have been a red card. And so he's gone. Sacco got lost at Tottenham. Then we're playing Schlupp, who's a left wing back at centre back, with Martin Kelly. That's kind of how it happened. And then we've got to play Man City with a makeshift back four, who you can imagine that when they saw the team sheet and had a look, they were just rubbing their hands together. So that's kind of how it came about in the end.
Well, I mean, the second goal is massive in that game. I say this all the time, that, you know, against sides like Crystal Palace, it's about the second goal in the game. Because, you know, when there's only one in it, sides can hang in there. And Palace hung in first half. But then when City's second half came out and played so fast for the start of that second half and made it, you know, it felt like the goal was coming. They very much came out with the attitude that they were just going to kill it. Went 2-0 and then it was all over. And, you know, it sort of goes from there. But It has left Palace in just in a really tricky little situation, because whilst Hull's away record isn't great, and whilst it'd be much worse if you were going to Hull, it's going to be a really tricky afternoon, I think, it's on Sunday. And it's going to be tense at Palace. It now feels you put yourself into a position where it feels like you've got something to lose, if you almost know what I mean. It's no longer battling and positively battling to get out. It's now could well be a nervy afternoon.
Well, you say that, right? I mean, the feeling behind the Palace fans isn't as nervy as you think. I mean, there is a lot of Palace fans who are hoping that Sunderland beat Swansea and that's it, we're safe. So if Sunderland beat Swansea and we go into that game, it doesn't matter what happens, then we're safe. But you can't rely on that, obviously. But I really think we're going to do that game. Because when it comes down to it, over the years, when we've had one game to do something, when we need to pick up this one point, we've always done it. We've always managed to do it. And it won't be pretty, and it won't be, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying it's going to be easy to beat Hull. But Hull need to beat us, and we need a point. The Hull have to win.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, and I think there's... And
that
again,
starts off in a better position. Also, after that, we could lose that game. And we can lose a game against Man United in the next game afterwards, which, I mean, Mourinho says he's going to play his reserve team. Well, I mean, I'm sure they're quite good. they've got to beat Spurs. And I know Spurs lost 7-0 or something to Newcastle in the last game of the season last year, but they're not going to do that this year. So there's lots of permutations to go. And the most important thing about that is that it's in our hands.
Well, I'd say the most important thing is what you've just said there, that in many ways there's no bad result from the Sunderland-Swansea game. I mean, I know that obviously that a Sunderland win just puts Palace safe, but if Swansea did beat Sunderland, then it even more so means that there's not even a good point for Hull in the game.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's a game that Hull would then absolutely have to win, or they'd be consigned. And I think it is worth pointing out that, you know, Palace start that game and Allardyce starts that game, and his players start that game knowing a draw is enough. A draw at home is enough. And I think that it doesn't even turn it into a cup final. It more turns it into sort of like a European Cup semi-final second leg, if you know what I mean, where there's an aggregate... there's an aggregate result for Crystal Palace here. And I think that's worth bearing in mind, and also that the crowd will be on board with that as well. The crowd will understand that even if it's 1-1 with 5 minutes to go, it should be Hull bombarding Palace and Palace looking to pick them off on the break.
It should be. And I think look, there's a chance that Tompkins is back. Kabay might be back. There's even a chance that Dan could be back, although I don't think he'll play Dan. That's going to be big for us. Apparently in training, they've been going crazy this week. Joe Ward's got a broken nose. Townsend's tweaked his hamstring. I mean, it's going to be nervy as well. Don't get me wrong. I've looked at the table and looked at every permutation probably every hour for the last 3 days, and it's not going to stop either. You know, all the Palace fans, it's a 12 o'clock game. We're all going to get there early. Everyone's just got to be awake and ready and on it. And, you know, we can't have one of these games on telly where you don't realise you're on telly till the 25th minute and you're 2-0 down.
On the idea that you mentioned the crowd there being awake, but also with reference to the players, it seems very much like an afternoon where the big players through the spine of that side, and I accept, obviously, that there's the issues at centre-back, but the big players through the spine of that side, like Caballé, like Benteke, that the need is for them to step up as well, isn't there? Benteke's had a relatively strong sort of last sort of 8 weeks, certainly before this recent bad run. But against Hull should be the point at which, you know, you get to see his clash, you get to see him shine, you get to see him be the £32 million striker that you bought.
Yeah, you do, but only if Kabay and Luca are doing their work. If they're doing their work and they stay close to the centre-backs, and you've got Van Aanholt and you've got Ward, if they tuck in close as well and don't leave space so we don't get overrun there, that's going to give the chance for them to get the ball to Wilf, to get the ball to Townsend, and then maybe we can put the ball to Benteke, not around his neck, maybe even to his feet for a few times, maybe put him in a bit, maybe hit on the break as they're attacking us. It's the thing about this sort of game with Benteke, he's not going to be picking up the ball and driven around four players. It's going to be a dirty game. So what you will see is you're going to see free kicks. He's going to pepper the box with it, and I can see him rising up and scoring a header. But I don't think he's the player that's going to, in this type of game, that's going to show that £33 million worth in Sam's team. And you could have Fraser Campbell up there in this game, you know what I mean? You see more of his worth when you play against a team like Liverpool, who give him a bit more space, who play against Chelsea, who, again, gave him so much space and so much room that he's not going to get anything. He's going to get two players marking in this game.
Okay. It'll be a funny season. I mean, it is very much one just to get out of. And it's strange, isn't it? I think that if Palace do get the result on Sunday, then there'll be a sudden wave of optimism, I'd like to think, around Selhurst Park. The idea that Allardyce gets to have his summer, gets to get some players in, that a couple of lads who are there who haven't performed this season will get shipped out, but that there's a core, actually, of a side, and certainly what I saw at Anfield was the core of a side who, to me, look as likely as anyone else in the bottom half to make the move next season into the top half.
Yeah, but it's Crystal Palace. We just have no clue what's going to happen. We're like Noddy's car. Is it going to break down? Is it going to work? You turn up and you just don't know. But, I mean, you are right. There's also a lot of players at the end of their contract. There's a lot of players that Hennessy's done well, but I think we need another keeper in there. We definitely need another two centre-backs in there, maybe one centre-back. Obviously, he's going to try Sacco, but I don't know how that's going to work out. A lot of people are going to be in with him, and I don't know what Liverpool are going to want to do for him. But, yeah, I mean, there's massive optimism if we do this game. But it's football, isn't it? You've got to do the game. You've got to concentrate, and everyone's got to be up for it. But I tell you, Palace, the fans won't be nervous. I know that sounds a weird thing to say, but they're going to make sure the place is absolutely rocking. Absolutely jumping. I think that can make a big difference, and especially in the second half, if they're trying to get the goal to win the game, shooting into that end, into our cop, I mean, you can't say it's not going to go in.
So give me a prediction.
I think we're going to win, and I think it'll be quite comfortable. I think it'll be a horrible game. Like, if you're watching it, oh, honestly, disgusting game. But I think we'll probably win about 2-0. And I think we'll score fairly early on. And I think it'll feel like quite a party atmosphere down at Selhurst Park.
Excellent stuff. Always good to speak to Robbie. He's expecting a party atmosphere. It'll be an interesting game. Let's see what everybody else thinks. It's funny with Palace. It's always good to speak to Robbie. And it's funny with Palace, isn't it, Paul, that they've ended up repeatedly sort of dragging themselves into this position. They look like the players are a bit too good for it. They got the win they needed at Liverpool. You just sort of thought it'd be that it was all done by then. You'd have thought anyway that they shouldn't be getting themselves into this tangle, and they've managed to.
Yeah, it's bizarre, really. It seems whatever manager they seem to have, they seem to be very streaky. Win, you know, six in a row, go unbeaten, six in a row, lose six in a row, you know.
Yep.
It just seems bizarre. And I think that after the... What was the win that they had where they thought they'd literally secured it? Was it the Liverpool game? Yeah,
it was at Anfield, yeah.
It was at Anfield. And then they had Spurs. And they probably was thinking to themselves at the time, yeah, if we get anything from Spurs, that's a bonus. But really, they'd be looking to secure their Premier League status in the Burnley game. And they got shocked in that. And that's why they're in this situation now. They could be well at home and hosed and not worrying about this. Now they're in a... I would say they're still favourites to survive because of their goal difference and because of a lot of things need to happen for them not to go down.
Well, one of the things that I think is that the Burnley game is, if I'm a Palace supporter, and Robbie's very upbeat there, but if I'm a Palace supporter, I'm looking at that Burnley game and going, that's a 6-point swing game. Mm. You know, Burnley right now, if that result goes the other way, Burnley are on 37 points and Palace are on 41. Mm. And Palace are actually home and host, and Burnley are worrying about things. And I just think that that's what this game is again. You know, it's at Palace. Well, the Burnley game is at Palace. Mm. And, you know, they got beat 4-0 by Sunderland at home as well. In that, you know, they have had this strange season where no one's quite sure what Palace is going to turn up. And I don't think it should be as straightforward as they just get to turn up and stroll this one Palace. Because you've seen, you know, I saw them at Anfield and they played really well. Mm. You know, they took the sting out the game. They killed the game. When they got the opportunity to break in the first half, they broke. And then when they had the opportunity to build some pressure in the second half, they built some pressure. It was very much, it was the performance of a side that had come between 8th and 14th, not a side that's at the bottom. It was very mature. But my worry is that, you know, if they come up against a busy, bustling Hull side, they could suddenly find themselves, this is a bit harder than they expect. It's a tough day. Mm. And if something goes against them, then they could really be up against it.
Mm. Yeah, that's not going to be an easy game at all for either team, actually. I'd probably be erring towards Hull, if anything, just because, I don't know, I could just see... With Palace, what I found when Spurs played them is that they huff and puff a lot. And if you shut them down and you compete with them, they're a very physical side, Palace. And if you stand up to them and don't try to sort of outskill them in the first half, eventually, you can get through. They sort of run out of ideas and they can get a bit disheartened. But, you know, in Zaha, I've talked about him a lot this season. He's really impressed me. I think he's gone up a notch in quality this season. And then Benteke is always dangerous. I think Townsend might be out with an injury, which might be a problem for them because he's been part of that kind of three-pronged...
Yeah, he went off last week, didn't he?
Yeah, so I think he's out for the rest of the season. I might have heard that or I might be hearing wrong. But yeah, it's a difficult one to call.
I think it is a difficult one to call. And I think the thing that is in Palace's favour is remembering that they need to get a point, just a point. A point just does them. A point just don't mean it takes them out of all of this, means that Hull can't catch them. And that's worth remembering. I think that's the thing that can go for them. Who do you think's going to go down? One side, you've got three to pick from.
Oh. I really wouldn't like to say. I'm going to go for. Who's Swansea's last game, by the way?
Swansea's last game is West Brom at home. So they've got Sunderland away and West Brom at home.
There. And Hull's got Tottenham. I think it could be Hull, you know.
I think Hull looked the ones who are most vulnerable. If you ask me to put money on a place, my actual money, I think Hull are the ones who at this point you go,
Hull going down, Swansea just surviving, Palace above the three.
Palace pulling away. Going to the very top then, Paul. It's sad to say that Chelsea are just one win away. And across the course of the weekend, Friday night, West Brom away, and then Watford home on the Monday. This is now... We'll talk about Spurs actually first, because I thought it was the desire for, in general, I mean, I don't think it's just football and I don't think it's just Tottenham, for when elite sports people just find something a bit too far and then everyone wants to say that they bottled it. You know what I mean? Right. It drives me mad. And Spurs have bottled absolutely nothing here. If Chelsea throw this away now, you can maybe use that sort of language.
Yeah, sure.
But Spurs, I thought it's just completely out of order. Spurs have had a great season. They went on a great run and they just weren't quite able to sustain it.
Yeah, I was absolutely fuming because I actually preempted that on the previous show and said that if we don't win at any point towards the end of the season, the bottle thing's going to come out. And I just thought, you know, we've just won 9 games in a row. In what world is that a bottle job? You know, it's like the least, you know, if it wasn't for us, basically, there wouldn't be any, you know, it would have been a possession. The title would have been over. And even Chelsea fans were phoning up a radio station who I won't even give them the the pleasure of saying their name, but saying to them, you know, what are you talking about? You know, if you know, Tottenham have been probably the most consistent side, or have been the most consistent side over the last two seasons. We've just come up against a Leicester side that were unbelievable. And a Chelsea side that won 13 games in a row at a crucial point that really took everyone out of the equation, not completely, just Tottenham. Yeah, yeah. And we even talked about that at the time, that it's going to be hard for anyone to come back. So the fact that we got down to four and we nearly got it down to one, I'm completely proud of the team. And you know, I can't speak highly enough of what they've achieved this season.
It's... eventually goes to a defeat. I think the interesting thing, something which you, if you're Pochettino, you know, when you're looking at the league table, is that Spurs have lost fewer games than Chelsea. So it's interesting that it's a defeat that eventually does them, I think, in terms of the title race this season. Right now, as we sit here right now, what's striking about Chelsea's figures across the whole table is they've only drawn three, whereas Spurs have drawn eight, Liverpool have drawn 10. And I think that that's where, you know, Manchester United have drawn 14. You know, you can point these ones out. These are sides who haven't lost a ton of games, but the difference between them and Chelsea is Chelsea have been very, very efficient in terms, right the way across, especially the 13-game run, but across the whole of the season, in ensuring that they don't draw games that they shouldn't. And that's maybe something that Pochettino will be looking at.
Definitely. I mean, I'd say in the first part of the season, we definitely drew too many games. I would say that had a lot to do with the fact that we were playing Champions League football, and it was a case of almost like not wanting to get beat after those Champions League games as opposed to going out to win them. And I found in the second half, well, from Christmas onwards, I found that we were going out to try and win games as opposed to not getting beat, and that made a big difference. And that was more to do with the fact we didn't have European football. We had a lot of players coming back from injury, and all of a sudden we started to flow. And if you look back, 9 games before the West Ham game, we won in a row. Before that, we lost to Liverpool and drew with Man City, and we won the previous 6 before that. Yeah. So that's 15 out of the last 17 games won. I mean, how much more of a challenge can you... You know, if you'd done that in normal life, in any other given season, you'd be top of the league.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's still possible for Spurs to get 86 points last season, Leicester win it with 80. I mean, this is one of my things around Liverpool at the minute. It's worth pointing out that at the minute, Liverpool have got 70 points last season. Spurs, who had a good season, only got 69. Yeah, yeah. Arsenal got 70 and finished second. You know, Liverpool have still got 2 games to go. Spurs have got 3. They can get to 86 points, but they're coming up against a Chelsea side that if they needed to, and they still might, but they might get a 93-point season. And I sort of think that if you're the side that comes second to a side that breaks 90 points, you've just got to doff your cap to them and say, well, they're worthy champions. You know, anyone who's running around breaking 90 points, I'd even say anyone's running around breaking 85 in this league, you've almost got to go, well, that's how good they are. They're obviously a great side, and it's no disgrace to finish second to them.
No, not at all. Chelsea are big rivals, but you know, I'm not blind. I can see that they've had a really good season. I think that Conte's not really getting enough credit for the fact that, you know, if you told me that Victor Moses was going to be playing right wing back and a sort of mediocre kind of known Marcus Alonso left wing back, and they were going to win the league with them two, I'd have told you you're losing your mind. And if throw David Luiz into the mix as well, and you know, I just could not see it. So Conte, there's a lot to be said from Conte. I've spoken about it before. He won the double in his first season with Juventus. So he's got form, you know. And I like the way that he seems to get more. He's one of those managers, like both Klopp and Pochettino, they seem to get more out of players that other managers couldn't seem to get it out of. You know what I mean?
And I think he's really settled into that side, and it's I'm hugely impressed. I mean, it's worth remembering about Chelsea's start, really, and how, you know, how phenomenal this run is. I think for other sides down the division, Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, Manchester United, people beating themselves up thinking, you know, we could have given them a real run for the money. It's what's striking is that you know, you go through the whole gamut of results early in the season. They were in a bit of a bad way. You know, the start isn't fantastic. They get beat 3-0 by Arsenal. They get beat 2-1 by Liverpool. There's a 2-2 draw in there against Swansea, which would have looked pretty expensive later on. And it was looking as though it was going to be really difficult for them, and it was going to be difficult for them to find his way. And then all of a sudden, he commits to the shape, and he commits to the system, and he commits to his players. And I think that's when you talk about Klopp and Pochettino and how they get more out of players. I think one of the things that you actually see them do is commit wholeheartedly to the players. They just give them the full backing and the full support. If they're putting it in training, and if they're putting it in for them and they're listening to their manager, then they get this full backing back. And I think that you see that with Conte. It appears to be, you know, it seems to be a football club, that a team, a squad that's very much run itself on just on decency. You know, and stuff like Costa's behaviour's changed a little bit. It's noticeable that there seems to be a genuine sort of collective focus.
But don't you think Costa's behaviour's changed, and Hazard as well, because of the manager?
That's what I mean. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's literally, they've seen that they can't mess with him and they can't play the little games. And, you know, I heard, you know, when they had the argument at Christmas, you know, with Conte and Costa, he said to him, you know, F off to China, you know, and that's the sort of attitude he's got. He's like, if you're not part of this, then, you know, we don't want you.
Yeah, it's, for me, you know, looking back on it now, and you're presuming that Chelsea get over the line in the next two games, and I think there's every chance that we do in either of them, and then it's all done and dusted. I'd be stunned if we're still talking about this next week. Is the two games that swing it are the two games that they have back-to-back at the end of November, when they get Spurs at home, win 2-1, and then they go to Man City and win 3-1 away. That slap bang at that point, on the run of...
Could have easily, you know...
Lost both of them.
Lost or got a point from two, you know, it really, really... You know, I'm not just saying that City murdered them on the day, really.
Yes, yeah, no. City really deserved it on the day, and Costa drags them over the line in that game. You know, he gives Otamendi a torrid time, turns it all round, and he, you know, De Bruyne misses, and then Costa's absolutely irresistible for half an hour, and they just can't cope with them at all. And I think that they're the two games which, in the end, you know, they're the ones that they allow that run to perpetuate itself. They keep they keep it all moving, and they're the ones that I think you'll look back on as the sort of the season-defining games. I think they then have a couple of tough games back-to-back, looking at the end of January and the start of February, after they've lost to Spurs, where they go to Anfield and get a point, which at the time felt like they might have needed a bit more, but then they beat Arsenal the next one. And 4 points from those two, again, they just kept everyone at bay.
Yeah.
And it's interesting with Chelsea, because it's easy for us, certainly those who, you know, those who don't support them, to sort of look down their nose at times. But there's been a couple of seasons recently, Ancelotti's Chelsea, this Chelsea, and arguably even Mourinho's last Chelsea winning title side, where more than any of the others, you've been able to say, well, they're just the best team in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them.
Yeah, you've got to hold your hands up. No complaints from me. It was the 30, I think the 13 in a row was definitely the catalyst. But they've kept it going all season, and good luck to them.
Yeah, one other thing I want to ask you about Spurs then, coming back to them, Paul, is now not being able to do it. I mean, there's every chance that, for instance, when Spurs kick off against United, they know that Chelsea are champions, that they can't catch them at that point. There's the points aren't there for them. The most they can get is 86, and Chelsea can be on 87. It's therefore, you said to me sort of before we were recording the show, that you'd be gutted if they didn't find a way to box second off at this point. That's the most important, not to do what happened last season.
Yeah, we've got three chances, like we did last season, to secure second spot. And we didn't manage to do it. I think we had Southampton. The games fail me right now, but Newcastle was the last game of the season. But Southampton and another game in between that, or after it, or before it. But we didn't manage to do that. That was really... put a bit of a down on the summer, because it was almost like, and the fact that Arsenal finished above us as well, that can't happen now, and obviously we can't finish lower than third due to Liverpool's draw the other day, so that means that we need a point from the last three games. The thing that gives me a bit of confidence is the last game at White Hart Lane, which is a very emotional time for all of us, you know, especially me going there, you know, as a youngster. 1977, my first game.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I'm showing my age now.
Very much so.
Yeah. So, you know, taking a milk crate over there after school, you know, for European games, so you can stand on it. I've got lots of stories. We could be here all day. But yeah, it's going to be an emotional day for us. So I think that actually helps, in a sense. Whatever happens with Chelsea, there's not going to be that kind of...
that it's Manchester United.
It's Man United as well, which we're always up for. So I expect us to get the point that we require in that game.
It'd be a Manchester United as well. The other thing is, they'll have played the Thursday night game, Europa League, where they're going to put out the strongest possible side. You suspect, I mean, Mourinho has his own way of sort of working with his players' fitness, but I'd suspect that you get very much a rotated side, because there's no reason for United to want to put more into those players'
legs. But you know what? It's not like the old days with me with Spurs. Like, I would pray that the opposition would be, you know, there'll be players getting injured and I feel we can face up against Man United's best side at home and still give them more than the game. So I'm not concerned what they do. I mean, Mourinho, I've heard so much drivel coming out. I mean, the latest one today was, this is the most important game of our history, in our history. I hope I read that wrong and he's been misquoted, but that's what I heard about a Europa League semi-final, which is absolutely bizarre. But so I'm not a big fan of Man United. I mean, we're talking about going unbeaten and drawing games and stuff like that. And Man United are the perfect example of that, that a team can go that long unbeaten and it's almost not worked in their favour. They might as well have lost a couple of those games and won, you know, three more, and they'll be in a much healthier position. So it's almost like you get punished for being consistent. It's all about winning games, really.
And you want to also sign off at White Hart Lane with a win. I think that's the other thing as well. Everyone will want that. The players themselves will want that, you know, for all the talk around Spurs and the youth prospects that have come through. But even the footballers now have been there. This is a side that's basically been built over 2, 3, even 4 seasons. They'll all know what it means. They've been there. They've been playing for the club.
Yeah. I think what the positive thing I can take away from it is that it's not like we're moving away to Stratford. You know, my whole area, that's where I was born, Tottenham. It's all going to be redeveloped and a lot of the businesses and people that I know are going to be better off. Mm. And my mum's still got a house there. So for me, it's a positive thing. There's the emotional sides attached to it, but it's not, you know, we're going back there, you know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like it feels better and we're going to be away for one season. So, you know, it's not as bad as it sounds.
Trip to Wembley and all that sort of stuff.
Well, everyone else is going to be playing at Wembley. So this is going to be some sort of record, isn't it, for the amount of teams that have played at Wembley in one season.
It's got to be. It absolutely has to be. All right, then, looking at the rest of the top four picture, Man United, it seems as though they've thrown the hand in. Arsenal very much haven't. They got themselves a big win against Southampton and they know how to do this. I spoke to Natasha Henry earlier and this is what she had to say. The inevitability of Arsenal with Natasha Henry. Big win last night against Southampton and suddenly Arsenal very much look like a side that have come alive, both centre-forward scoring, all the obvious sort of stuff. Arsenal targeting fourth place, every cliche, every joke you want, but fourth place would be a very, very good achievement at this stage.
Yeah, I actually find it really amusing because everyone's in uproar about the fact that we could well finish in fourth again. And with the FA Cup final coming up, obviously I'd love to win another trophy, but I think I'd be equally amused by the annoyance of every team that finishes outside of the top four with the fact that we finish in it, if we finish in it.
I don't think that would limit even at the sides who finished outside the top four. For instance, I refuse to believe that Spurs supporters are going to be entertained by the prospect of Arsenal clawing their way into fourth. I don't think Chelsea will be very impressed, certainly if there's an FA Cup as well in the back pocket. It would almost feel like the ultimate needle from Wenger at this stage to find a path to basically win the remaining four games of the season, of which two are at home and one's in a neutral ground, to then sort of plant his flag on fourth and say, there you go, I've done that and I've picked another cup up.
Yeah, I think I think even some Arsenal fans will be annoyed, which don't start me. I don't see the point of wanting your team to do bad just to get rid of a manager or just to prove a point. I'm always going to want my
certainly
team
this
to
manager.
Do the
it's
best
not like
they
he's
can.
Roy Hodgson at Liverpool, for God's sake. You know what I mean? He's Arsene Wenger. He's won tons of titles, gone to a European Cup final.
Yeah, but you know he's stubborn. He's old. He's tactically a dinosaur. You know, whatever he does, people aren't going to be happy. Unless there's a season where he literally wins the Premier League, gets to the Champions League final and gets to the FA Cup final, there will still be people calling for him to go because they've just got themselves in that mindset now of we don't want him, we want him to go. So I don't think it makes a difference really what he does. There's always going to be that section of the Emirates that is done with him completely.
So is he actually going to pull this together? I mean, in fact, let's talk about the Stoke game first. Stoke are a weird side. We actually talked to someone on 50-50 Football on Monday about Stoke and how, you know, how they're sort of depressed as a football club. But on the other hand, Stoke's derby in the Premier League has somehow become Arsenal. I don't entirely understand the anatomy of this journey, but Arsenal and Stoke are locked in this derby tussle against one another. All the obvious cliches to say, it's 5:30 Saturday night, it's a loud ground when it gets going, whatever the Britannia is now called. It can get a fair bit of noise in there. It's not going to be easy for Arsenal is what I'm saying.
Is it ever easy for Arsenal? I think much like Man U were until very recently, teams always want to be the Arsenals, the Man U's, the Liverpools, and more recently, the Chelsea's and the Tottenham. You know, wherever you go in the league, people want to beat you or at least get a point against you, knowing that, you know, it's a better result for them than it is for you. I spoke to someone who I've known a long time the other day, and he said I was quite like a bad penny. Not in a negative way, but that I always just pop up at places and seem to know people. And I think that's kind of what Arsene Wenger's like. No matter what you think, how bad you think things are for him, he just manages to find that double-sided coin and win when he needs to. Although I think the players have let him down this season a hell of a lot. I think, you know, this is the least he deserves for the loyalty that he's given them.
So it becomes a question again in the Stoke game about the players. Sanchez, moment of magic against Southampton to open the scoring. Giroud scores later on. But separate to them, the player who I noticed watching the game, who stood out, possibly the best performance I've seen him have for Arsenal, considering the money that was spent on him last summer as well. That's a bit of a surprise. Is Xhaka. I thought he was very good at keeping the ball ticking over, I thought, against Southampton. He was central to everything. He was constantly available. I thought it was possibly the best performance I've seen him have this campaign.
I mean, that's not hard, is it, for it to be his best performance? Because he's been shocking. I mean, even I was so excited to see him coming. I knew he's a bit of a hothead, but I kind of like that in a player. You know, I like the Adams, the Vieiras, the players that are going to kick someone as much as give their all for the team. I don't know what it is with him. I don't know if it's a mentality thing or whether he has been picked on by the officials. But I think for me, more recently, this whole change in formation, the beneficiary has been Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think the injury to him is probably the biggest disappointment of the past month for me, because he's just been superb. And then you've had Rob Holding, who everyone mocked us for buying him for, like, you know, 2p last summer, who's been absolutely superb. Xhaka, I don't know. I mean, until he has a run of good games, I don't really want to say that he's actually worth the money, because right now it's very hit and miss.
Okay. You mentioned Oxlade-Chamberlain there. He's gone off again, injured. Every single time he gets a run of games, he does seem to end up picking up a knock. Has he enjoyed himself then? You're saying there before, he's impressed. Has he very much enjoyed right wing back? It does seem like a good position for him. It allows him to showcase everything that he's good at in the game. He's not, you know, he's quite a three-dimensional footballer, Oxlade-Chamberlain. Is Bellerin's a strong replacement to have for him, but do you think that is going to be a bit of a blow going into the Stoke game?
Oh, of course. I think for him, I think he got to the point where he realised, I can't be demanding where I want to play. I'm not Mesut Ozil, I'm not Alexis Sanchez, I don't have that power within the club, and I've not shown enough to demand to play in the middle of the park. But this season, he seems to have just taken whatever opportunity he's been given and run with it. And like you say, he has been great, and Bellerin hasn't been so good. Even when he's come on as a substitute and we've been winning, he's been slightly disappointing. I think it's a whole Samson thing. He needs to get rid of that awful haircut. maybe the boys need to hold him down in training on Friday and just get it sorted. Because it's shocking. It's not the 90s, you know. The Tories may be in power, but it's not the 90s.
And this stuff matters. He's at Arsenal. He's not playing for Stoke.
You know, someone was saying the other day when we were losing at Palace, and saying, God, Arsenal's team have the best hair. We really do have the best hair and facial hair going. I'm quite proud of that. You know, in the small measures of things that make me happy,
yep.
That doesn't really make me happy. But
should be a trophy for it.
Yeah, is it like a top? Is it like finishing top four trophy? Is it another one of those?
It should be one of those. Maybe make your own. get it in there. I honestly best turned out. When the PFA does the team of the year, they should have a best turned out aspect. What's your best turned out 11? Who would you be putting in there? That's what they should have to do. So the all players should vote.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah,
peer Costa review. Would never make it, would he?
Who?
Costa
would never. Nope, he would never make best turned out. Emre Can's probably captain. Hair never out of place, but no, I think it's worth pointing out the strength of the Arsenal hairline.
It's unfortunate that they don't spend as much time on their defending skills as they do on their hair gel.
Yeah, yeah,
it might be in a better situation this season.
Indeed. Maybe get it sponsored by Nivea, although then there'd be the accusations that Arsenal get about the Emirates and the Emirates FA Cup with Liverpool.
You know what? Then we'd have the disturbing Adam Lallana with no facial hair advert, which I'm still traumatized by every time I see, because he looks like a 5-year-old boy.
We can't have that. Yeah, he's 28. You can't be having that. Giroud came off the bench and scored to bring it back to the football, and fantastic hair and facial hair and sheer levels of handsomeness. Giroud came off the bench and scored, and the Welbeck thing is, it's, you know, he got his goal against United. It seems a strange situation for me, almost with one eye on the summer, because if I'm Olivier Giroud, I'll be dead honest with you, Natasha, you know, Arsenal are a great club, all that sort of stuff, that's clear as day. But if I'm Olivier Giroud, I'm sort of looking back at this season thinking it's a bit of a lost one in my career, in that he's scored a fair few goals when he's had opportunities, but he seems, some footballers end up in a situation where they're the first player not to play. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all the time, it happens at every club, and it's happened right the way through, you know, through football in history, that a footballer just sort of becomes number 12. And that's what, from the outside, looks to me, has happened to Giroud. He was a good enough striker to lead the line for France in a home tournament last summer. And now he finds himself very much, you know, if Sanchez wants to go up there, or they feel that's the smart move, then Sanchez plays. Recently, it's been Welbeck. There's always the little move towards perhaps Walcott getting a little look up there as well. Giroud very much just sort of feels like he's the one who's always about to be left out.
I kind of feel with Giroud is that it's partly his own fault, because there's been games where it's been a Giroud game.
Yeah.
It's been a game, I've looked at who we're playing and I thought, I need that physicality against that defence. And he hasn't done anything. So he doesn't have the pace, he doesn't have the trickery, you know, bar the scorpion kick, he doesn't have the trickery of a Sanchez. So if you're not using your physicality, why am I picking you ahead of a Sanchez? You know, that's kind of how I think Wenger's looking at it. And for all intents and purposes, yeah, he did lead the line in the summer. But if you think about where he's going to go, is he going to go to a team that is realistically above Arsenal if he leaves? He can go somewhere and play every game. But is that team going to be above the top six in the Premier League, or equal to the top six in the Premier League? I don't think it is. I think it's, if he wants to go and play every game, fair play to him. He'll get a good send-off from me. I'll send him a hair care pack, you know. But he needs to be realistic that he doesn't do enough for a man of his size. Something that we've always said about Lukaku until recently.
Yeah.
He doesn't bully defenders. Giroud's not a small boy. He's a chunky guy. So he should be taking advantage of that stature. And I'm not saying go and kick people and headbutt people. You don't have to be Costa about it. But just show them you're there. Just, you know, give them a bit of a nudge. Like, taking it back to the old days if we want to, you know, just a bit of the dark arts.
All right, then. Looking at the Stoke game, where a bit of dark arts might be required, I don't think it'll be an easy afternoon for Arsenal, but Stoke are about as depressed as a football club that sits healthily mid-table can be at this stage of the season. Is there? Are you expecting a victory?
Yeah. I don't think it'll be an easy victory. I think these past couple of weeks we've been churning them out. We've been, like, getting to half-time and it's like the nerves are kicking in and then maybe a couple of late goals. I think it could be similar to last night. Stoke will set up, even though they're at home, they'll set up to protect themselves from what Arsenal can do. And it will get to the point, there'll be that one moment, and I mean, you know, people like Ryan Shortcross aren't what they used to be.
Mm.
I would have been scared of Sanchez going up against him before, but he's been shocking since he's returned from injury. So I'm thinking a 1-0, a 2-0, but then Stoke have also got those players that can score a screamer from 40 yards. So I could be wrong, but I expect all 3 points, without a doubt.
All 3 points Natasha expects. Let's see what everybody else expects. Always good to speak to Natasha. The half five factors one for me on this one, Paul. Stoke, yes, they have been a depressed side for a while, but they sort of owe the supporters one. You never know in this type of game. It's the last home game of the season. It's a half five kickoff. Arsenal can get it together, but you're expecting it to be a raucous crowd.
Yeah, I expect it actually to take the same sort of shape as the game yesterday with Southampton, where the home team dominates, and it's crucial that when Stoke do get those opportunities that they take them, and more than probably one, because Arsenal tend to come strong in the second half. And if it's 0-0 at half time, and when I say come second half, strong second half, I don't mean historically, I mean at this stage of the season.
Yeah.
Because they're such experts in getting those last five wins off the on the trot. They've done it so many seasons, it's almost like the way that Ferguson used to plan a championship, you know, is almost like, oh, we'll play all right in the sort of autumn period, and then we'll just start getting better, and all of a sudden we'll turn on the afterburners in January and just leave everyone in their wake. Well, Arsenal have got sort of a poor man's version of that, which is sort of centres around the sort of last 5 to 7 games. And it's like get 5 wins in that period and that should see us 3rd to 4th.
Yeah, that's very much what they do. And it is an impressive ability to get it together. The other side that is still in this, and I've been saying right the way through the campaign that everyone presumes they're just going to turn the afterburners on and pull away. And every now and again, they look like they have. Manchester City, last week they score 5, and then so everyone presumes, oh, well, they'll be fine now. But they've got a tricky little home game here at the weekend against Leicester, where, you know, Leicester are now up into 9th. They've come with quite the run. Yep, they've lost a game at Everton and they've lost to Arsenal. But apart from that, in the last 10, they've won 7, drawn 1. You know, that's moving along at 2.2 points a game. And they beat City in the season, Paul. And I just sort of wonder with this one, it's a 12:30 on the Saturday. And if Leicester can settle in the game, they're very easy to be the sort of side who City won't like playing against. We saw that when they beat them 4-2. There's a strong counter-attacking zeal. They're happy to not have the ball. They're happy to turn you round fast. They're happy to break.
Yeah, I like Leicester at the moment. I mean, we've got to play them, so I don't like them that much. But, you know, in terms of the way that Shakespeare has turned them round, you've got to give them credit. And I guess it seemed like they only wanted to do what they were doing last season, and I think the whole Champions League campaign meant they had to almost like tear up the script from last season and do something completely new, bringing in new players, which meant that people like Mahrez and Vardy were sitting on the bench for Premier League games, which must have caused issues amongst the camaraderie in the camp. And you've seen now, since Shakespeare's come back in, it's almost like they've gone back, reverted to type, the way they were last season and the tail end of the season before. And I've got that team spirit back. And Vardy's got his mojo back as well. So you're right about the early kickoffs. I'm a strong believer in, like, literally all the big teams that I've seen at home in 12:30 kickoff, I think it's something to do with the crowd. They're not quite with it. And by the time they do get with it, sometimes the game's already gone, or, you know, they've dropped points at home. I've seen it so many times this season. So I think that kind of a factor. And also, the fact that Leicester will want to finish and continue the ascendancy, can they move up in the table?
They can still move up in the table. Yep, they can have one eye on West Brom. They can finish ahead of West Brom for that 8th place trophy. But I think it's the last big game of the campaign. They've got the 2 back to back. They've got City away, and then they've got Spurs at home. And I just sort of think, if you know, this is a side who've got a lot of ego. They were champions last year. And I think that they might well want to leave one on, at least one of those two sides. You know, the idea of being able to say to the supporters, yes, we got the quarterfinals of the Champions League, but we've still got something within us. We've got, you know, this is what we're capable of. Keep one eye on next season. I think, you know, if anything, Bournemouth at home with the last game of the season is the one where you expect them to be quite flat. I think these two back-to-back, I think you might see Leicester are pretty determined on proving a bit of a point.
Yeah, they do like to when they come. I mean, even when they weren't playing well at White Hart Lane earlier on in the season, they managed to get a 1-1 draw because they almost like raised their game as, you know, we're champions. Remember what happened last year? We're going to show you, kind of thing. So I think they still have that pride factor. You saw it with the Man City game as well, when they weren't playing well. During, I think, Ranieri was still there in that period.
Yeah, that's 4-2.
So they have still got that pride when it comes up against the so-called bigger clubs. And I think that whatever happens, I think they have repaired the damage that was prior to, you know, sort of Shakespeare being there. Because I think that they were almost a bit like Chelsea the season before, you know, almost becoming sort of an embarrassment for the club, you know. And I think they've repaired that damage. And respectable, you know, if they finish 9th, 10th, 8th, I think that's a respectable position considering that how well they've done in the Champions League.
Indeed. The other top four question then is Liverpool. They go to West Ham. So I spoke to Andy Middleton earlier today about West Ham, their season, their approach, and the fact that they scrapped their win against Spurs. Always good to speak to Andy Middleton, and here he is now to talk about West Ham United. And it's a bit walking wounded at the minute. On top of all the other problems, there's about 10 lads out of the lads, the 11 who play. There's about 3 or 4 of them who you would possibly rate at sort of 70-80%. And yet West Ham love a London derby. They love stopping Tottenham. They love making London clubs' lives a misery. And it was a great result the other week.
It certainly was. It certainly was. It can be our cup final. They can say what they like. As long as we win it every year, I don't care.
Yeah, it's one of them, really, isn't it? If you want to say it's our cup final, then we've retained the trophy for 7 consecutive seasons.
Exactly. I'll take all the small club digs they've got as long as we keep winning. was a good night.
It was a good night, but it was very much a battling night. I mean, it's a funny side, that Spurs side, and that I think they've shown they're a really good team at times this season, but they're also a team who can get drawn into a bit of a scrap. And one of the things, if you are the sort of football team who likes a scrap and does scrap, then sometimes you've got to cop for the fact that you might lose one or two. And that's where, you know, with one eye on this weekend's game against Liverpool, it's hard to keep, for any side, to keep pulling that sort of performance out, isn't it? So West Ham, they might all be looking at each other thinking they'll be as psyched up and as revved up for the one against Liverpool, but they actually might not be come kickoff.
Yeah, is that possible? I think, you know, as a fan, I'm hoping that last home game of the season, big game, live on tier against Liverpool, just follow up your last performance and prove the season's been a bit of a misnomer for all of you and crack on another performance like that. I'm hoping they might carry a bit through with that. And I do actually believe, whether it's by accident or by design, we've actually now found a way to play against the better sides that suits us, with the three at the back and allowing them to push on tight, can't play through the middle of us, and using Lanzini and the creativity to break quickly. I think we might have a system that will work as well against Liverpool as it could against Tottenham. That could be wishful thinking, but...
No, I think it may well be. And I think it's, you mentioned there, sort of keep it tight at the back, funnel things through the middle, be strong in the middle of the park. I mean, there's a lot of sides knocking around playing three at the back and four in front at the minute, but as back threes and then fours in front go, it's fair to say the four in front is pretty defensive. Byron, Noble, Nordfeldt and Creswell. I mean, Byron might end up being a right midfielder, but he's got to look at me as a right back. Creswell is a left back. Nordfeldt very much is a holding midfielder, and Noble can be a bit more progressive, but he's more than happy to dig in as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we lose a little bit when we've lost Kiarte if Norvelt comes in for him. But to be fair, a lot of people thought Norvelt was unlucky to be left out on Friday, because after a season we finally played him in his proper position and he looks half a player. So it is, but I think, and also to a degree, Barham and Creswell are neither one thing or the other. They're those modern fullbacks that are a fullback but can't really defend, but have both got decent quality deliveries on them. So I think that this kind of formation gets the best out of those two. Where it's probably weaker, and we need teams to push on us, is, and I actually quite like it, the three defenders are all defenders.
Yeah.
In Reid, Collins and Fonte, they're not going to come screaming out from the back, and they're not going to play out beautiful football, and they wouldn't probably fit into a Klopp or a Guardiola side. But if you want three guys who are going to throw their body in the way of the ball and defend, then it works well for them as well.
It's something which he's been working towards, the solution right the way through the season, a solution of sorts as to what to do in these games. It's worth noticing that in the last 10, West Ham actually lost the first five of the last 10, if you know what I mean. And since then, they're unbeaten in five, three draws in there, two of those are 0-0, then two 1-0 victories. The misnomer being the 2-2 against Sunderland, which will always feel this season like a game you should be winning.
Definitely. But I mean, the four clean sheets mean a lot. And if you look at, the Sunderland game was just, but I think those four clean sheets and who they were against, bearing in mind, I think before that, I think we conceded something like 15 in the previous five, is obviously a big turnaround to what we're doing. And the biggest problem isn't so much the system. I think, the 1-0s make it out to be a defensive system. The issue is actually the other end, because I don't know if Cagliari will ever score a Premier League goal, and we've had no Carroll, no Sacco, no one, so... The problem is we almost need those clean sheets to get anything, because we ain't going to be scoring 2s, 3s, and 4s unless by some miracle they get Carroll on the pitch for Sunday.
Is the feeling around that he may well try and force that one through? It's strange with Carroll, because his injury record makes him so inconsistent in terms of selection. He's always a player who I feel as though you're almost best just throwing in, because what's the alternative anyway?
I think now it is, because there's two games left of the season. I think I do think he'll probably be going in the summer anyway. And I'll be sorry at that at one level, but you can't, you get 2-3 games out of him, then he's out for 3 or 4. And that's, you can't have that in a side. We need to have a centre forward. So we've had no cutting edge up front at all this season. And I think unless we get, even with Carroll, it's not the best, and no one's much on the bench. I don't know what's wrong with Sacco again. So that our problem actually is going to be, I think, far more up front or really troubling. I mean, Lanzini obviously had his, played very well on the Friday, but we're really relying on him with no Antonio and nothing else up front to provide some sort of concern or cutting edge to the opposition.
It's the last game of the season. You said that before, last home game of the season. Is that situation calmed itself down. It was ridiculously sort of controversial, oft discussed in September and October. Even it was still rolling along then. From afar, it feels as though the club's now bedded into the ground. Everyone knows a lot more of what they're about. The functionality seems greater.
Yeah, I think with anything, you know, moving to a new home and you get to find the things out about it. The people that have said, it's not for me, I don't want to go anymore, replaced by the new people. And as with anything, time is always the greatest healer. You know, there'll be people that grow up that only know West Ham in that ground and don't talk about the old days. So I think, you know, the time will bed it in. And although it's a cliche, nights like Friday help a lot to make people want to recreate that sort of atmosphere and those sort of nights. And you have memories that are built at a new stadium. People start to forget the memories at the old one. So I do think the time will do it, and a winning side will do it ultimately. So I think, yeah, it's just one of those seasons. If we put it behind us, it'd be last. That's almost the reason I think most people would like to finish with another win. Because it's a better feeling going into the postseason, believing you're on the up,
yeah,
and your recruitment becomes happier and da da da. Da. So I do think, but I think that the feelings at the stadium are better. I still personally don't like it. That's not true. I like the stadium. I don't think it will ever be a football ground, but it is what it is. So people have got to get on and make the most of it.
Next one as well across the whole of the season has been the manager who's had a strange campaign. And you know, besides that, a strange campaign is this now bedded down? You were saying before you expect Carroll to go in the summer. Is this now bedded down into a situation where people broadly expect Bilic will stay?
I think so. I think the general feeling is he should have some goodwill in the bank from the first season. And with the problems around the move to the new stadium, and I think the problems around Payet, and if you look at him, he's had quite a bit to deal with. There's
been a lot of injuries from afar. I've been just every week. It feels like there's another West Ham lad who's gone down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, but part of my criticism is, to a degree, we do play players a lot in the wrong position, which he's done. However, you're doing that largely because of injury. So we had Norvelt and Antonio at right back. Well, if we'd had a fit, fully functioning Premier League lot right back, he wouldn't have done that. So there's some of it is down to recruitment. Some of it. So yeah, you could question some of his selections, but I feel overall the job he's done this season. Some of the tactical jobs he's done, like the one he did on Friday night, and what he did last year, and the way he managed the Payet situation and all of that, I think he deserves himself another year. I think he can himself very hard done by if the club didn't keep him after what he's done for us over 2 years.
And then it is sort of one eye on the summer. I mean, you mentioned there Carroll going. It's a funny sort of bit, load of recruitment for West Ham. I mentioned all of those lads before who were out, you know, 10 injuries of players who all have looked like Premier League players, but who don't necessarily look like top half Premier League players. And
no.
I think that's the trick that the manager's got to find a way to pull, is how he manages to cash his chips in on a fair few of them and replace them maybe with a couple fewer who will have stronger attendance records for them and who will also be a little bit better.
Yeah, I think, you know, Nordberg's a good example. I think, you know, and the lad at left back who's out injured now, everyone was saying they're a complete disaster, should get rid of them, why do we buy them? And a lot of people, now they've played in their proper position out of run, they actually look after decent players. So I think the biggest clear-out we'll be having is up front, Sacco and Carroll and the people that can't get the games in. The challenge is going to be getting any money for them, given their injury record. To try and build the pot up, and I think, you know, we're arguably stocked with Snodgrass and people like that, whether they were bad buyers or not, Fontaine and supplier. So I don't think we'll see the massive clear out, but what I hope we do, which is, as I said, we should have done last summer, is bring in three or four proven, very good players. So, for instance, we're linked with Zabaleta. In a way, I'd have said that's a bad signing, he's too old, however, if we're going to keep Barham and progress him, then Zabaleta's a great foil to teach the kid, and we've got two good players at right back there.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of recruitment, that if it's well thought through, will work. And I think, you know, there are players out there that I'd certainly be interested in loan or buying. When you look at City and Chelsea and the like, that you could bring in some very good players, said whether it's a loan or a loan to review with a buy up front, because you won't get a kick at either of them. So.
Definitely. I think that there's got to be some sort of, you know, from looking at the top six, I think there'll be a few who will even from every side in the top six who may well find a home at a club like West Ham with the big grounds, with the fact that there will be a bit of a budget. There's definitely room there to look at where Everton are, for instance, and target Everton's seventh place this season.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there are good enough players around. I think the Batshuayi at Chelsea and Nacho at Man City, who literally aren't going to go anywhere if they stay where they are, but are very, you know, whenever I've seen them play, they've looked a real deal. So you think you could do some sort of deal with a player like that and give him the chance to lead the line and make a name for himself, even if it is before another move, but actually to play football.
That's it. Players should be playing. I'm very big into this. Players should be playing. Let's have fewer substitutes on the bench. Conversation for another time. One eye on Sunday then. What's your overall prediction for this one?
I'm going to actually sit on the fence on this one and go draw. I think it'll be 1-1.
1-1, okay. Always good to speak to Andy. Let's get back, speak to Paul, and have a chat about Liverpool. Liverpool then against West Ham, or at West Ham this week, and the pressure is on for Liverpool big time. The point against Southampton could prove crucial, it could prove too dropped, and Liverpool, they won't even know that necessarily till the end of the season at this stage, Paul, and they'll also know, though, before kickoff on this one, they'll have a good, they'll be able to sleep on the knowledge of what Arsenal have done at Stoke. But this side, it should be of the view that one game against West Ham is a bit of a cup final. Go to the Olympic Stadium, win. It becomes very much fourth place. It's even more Liverpool's to throw away.
Mm. Yeah, I fancy Liverpool strongly in this one. I think that the West Ham performance that you saw against Tottenham hasn't been in keeping with their season, and I'm not slagging them off because I really do think they've had a horrendous injuries added to the
unreal,
fact.
Unreal.
You know, people don't really talk much about it because, you know, the West Ham, I guess, but they have had terrible injuries and to key players as well, which makes a big difference. You know, you can get away with some, but, you know, they've had, you know, 9-10 players, you know, the perennial kind of Andy Carroll.
Yeah, they've got 10 out now. Right now they've got 10 out.
Yeah, and also a lot of their best players as well. So I think, you know, I wouldn't have expected much more from West Ham. I always knew they'd be up for the Tottenham game because they are every season. It's just one of those things. So against Liverpool, I don't think you're going to see the same intensity, and I think that Liverpool's will to win or need to win should be enough to do it on the day. I'm not saying West Ham are going to roll over and die, but I just think that Liverpool's quality will be too much.
I mean, it's now become for Liverpool that it's... they made the decision that they're just going to make dog it from now until the end of the season. Seemingly, they're very much going to scrap and battle. And I think you're going to see more of that against West Ham. You might see Lallana back in, I think, to play in the front three. Firmino move across and Origi drop down to the bench. And I think the impact the Arsenal game will have is what Liverpool's subs policy is. So I think that Jurgen Klopp will already know the team he's going to pick. And as I say, I think it'll be for me, it'll be Origi out and Lallana in. And apart from that, I think it'll be relatively unchanged. But what it wouldn't surprise me then for you to see is, you know, if come 60 and Liverpool aren't ahead in the game, if Arsenal have won, and so therefore the pressure is on Liverpool a little bit, if it would but therefore be if Liverpool sort of thought to themselves, well, we've just got to, we've just got to win this. And I think what the table currently does is, yes, you know, United can still come with a run. They'll have two games in hand before Liverpool's next game by the time Liverpool finish, so the Spurs game being after the Liverpool game. But even if Arsenal win, they're a point behind, same number of games played. So it wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool conclude that they just try and win the game.
Yeah.
They just try and win this one and then go from there.
Yeah, I think they really have to go out with that attitude, and I think they will. I think they want to get it sorted as quickly as possible. They won't want it going into sort of final day territory because that puts a whole new pressure on it.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, Man City will have played as well, so there's only really the United Spurs game to come, and I just think it clarifies everything for Liverpool this one. You know, I think what Arsenal do will just clarify everything for Liverpool, which is if they just win this one, then it's, you know, there's every chance that they can have the gap that they want on Arsenal and then go from there, or there's every chance that they can begin to sort of to find the way in which they're going to turn the screw. The most points that Arsenal can get at this stage is 75, so Liverpool, you know, they know that therefore they've got to get to 76.
Yeah, do you think that, you know, just asking you this as a Liverpool fan, do you think that this season, if you could change things and you could make this first half of the season, the second half, change the season around?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that I've been speaking to a lot of my Liverpool friends and they're not really impressed since January onwards.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Even though you've recovered results-wise, in terms of the team and its its flow and its the mojo that it had before Christmas and that lovely period that it had where you just looked like you were going to beat everyone, minimum 4-0, maximum whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's kind of put almost like, not a downer, but maybe you'd be feeling a little bit more upbeat if it was
completely. Everywhere. If you felt like you were making a run, but at the minute it just feels like Liverpool are going to fall over the line. And yeah. I think in many ways that's almost a little bit unfair. I mean, you know, but Liverpool, the architects of that, it's such a, you know, if you actually run the results since the first game in February, you know, Liverpool 2-0 away at Hull, defeat, but then beat Spurs 2-0. But then the next game is 3-1 against Leicester. And the other thing that doesn't help with Liverpool in this is these games, by this point of the season, Liverpool had this mad January where they had so many games. But then by the end of that January, they're out of all the cups. So the season just becomes this stutter. Yeah. You know, there's over 14 days between Liverpool beating Spurs and then losing at Leicester. Mm. And then, you know, there's another international break to come. Liverpool beat Arsenal, they beat Burnley, they get a 1-1 with Man City. And then there's another break.
Coupled with key injuries to crucial players.
Yeah. Then Liverpool beat Everton, they look great, but Mane falls down injured.
Yeah.
And then that changes everything again.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, the 2-2 against Bournemouth, which felt like a massive two-point drop.
I think so. The best way you could say it is almost like it was a car was running so smoothly before Christmas, all of a sudden kept stalling every time it got going, you know, for reasons, you know, completely, really not down to them, you know, or the car.
And even that, you know, so even the Southampton game last week where it just finishes 0-0, if you just kind of 1-0 in that, everyone's feeling great, okay, one more win, you know, go and do it against West Ham. And I think that's been difficult. And I think that's why the supporters are, you know, it's become sort of psychologically quite tiring, if you know what I mean. You just want to see them go, put the afterburners on and just pull away from these sides.
And you've got these psychological stigmas that keep getting attached. Like, you know, we had the thing where, oh, we always concede from set pieces and went through all that and it almost like got over that. And then it's sort of like, oh, you can only beat the big clubs, but when you come across the smaller clubs, then you're going to come a cropper. So it's almost like they're trying to attach a stigma to Liverpool when really it goes a lot deeper than that. And, you know, when you're losing like people like your captain, Jordan Henderson, you know, your most lethal weapon up front, Sadio Mane, you know, Coutinho for long periods, Lallana for long periods. These are all key players. Sturridge, you know, all right, Sturridge might have gone a bit too far. But, by the way, is he fit?
It'll be interesting to see what he does with him. I think that he becomes his 60-minute option.
I was going to say that to you when you're talking about the 60-minute thing, because for me, in the last few games, it's the first time in ages that I've actually thought, oh, there looks a bit of a threat there. You know, there's something, I can see a bit of Daniel Sturridge coming out again.
I think you want to give him half an hour against tired defences. I think if Liverpool, I expect Sturridge to start against Middlesbrough. I don't think he starts against West Ham, but I think he starts against Middlesbrough.
Here's a question, though. Do you think he'll be still at Anfield in...
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, sadly not. Because you saw it last week, I thought, against Southampton. You know, the one moment of true quality around the penalty area from either side was Sturridge just very fast feet and suddenly he's turned away from three.
Yeah.
And, it's a shame that he turned away onto his right foot rather than... if he turns away onto his left, he scores.
Yeah.
But he turns away onto his right, he makes the keeper make a save. And even then, if he'd have put it the other side of the keeper and that scruffily, I think it might still have got over the line. But I think he's, you know, the raw ability of him is astonishing. But I think for his own well-being, he needs to go somewhere where he will play if he's fit.
Yeah.
And then that will help him develop proper fitness, full fitness.
Yeah.
I think he starts.
It definitely is a fitness issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think if Daniel Sturridge is 100% fit, he's probably starting for Liverpool now.
Yeah,
but
I think he's a project to get 100% fit in that, you know, a number of times you feel as though you're about to get him 100% fit and then there's another.
And I think the manager's patience probably would have run out and said, look, I can have a player on the side who's ready to go anytime, or I can nurse this guy who's just going to keep breaking down, you know.
Exactly. Thanks so much to Paul this week coming through on 50-54 and pushing right the way along. I think Liverpool will beat West Ham as well, and thank you very much to Andy, Natasha and Robbie for coming and letting us know whatever you're doing this weekend. Very much enjoy your football. That's been 50-50 football.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.